Hello and welcome to Pandora's Box. This is Kalia, and today is August 20th, 2015. The topic of our broadcast today is perfectly imperfect. Perfectionism is the curse of dysfunctional society. As humans, we're far from this thing we call perfection. We can bake the perfect cake or write the perfect letter, make perfect grades in school, achieve perfection in some kind of performance, but as human beings, we're flawed and we're imperfect. We are by design creatures who learn by making mistakes, and hopefully we learn through our mistakes. The word sin, which is big in our world religions, is an archery term that means miss the mark. As an archer, you shoot for the bullseye. If you hit the bullseye, you've achieved perfection or hit the mark you were aiming for. But an archer must try time and again to hit the bullseye, and each time he fails to hit the mark, he sins. To sin is to error or miss the mark, and this archery term can be applied to life itself. You may shoot for the stars, but only get as far as Kansas, and that's life. There are no guarantees in life. We can only do the best we can do in the moment, and we can hope our best will lead us somewhere beautiful. But our best is often, it can fall quite short of this thing we call perfection. Another thing about life is that our competitive world, we tend to compare ourselves with others. We are conditioned and taught to compare ourselves with others. We might grow up hearing, "Why can't you be more like your brother Bob?" Or, "Your sister Jean got straight A's on her report card. Why can't you?" If you were unfortunate to be raised by one or more narcissistic parents, perfection will be shoved down your throat because you're seen as an extension of the narcissistic parent who lives under the illusion of perfection. With a narcissist, the closest thing to perfection is having everything appear to be perfect on the outside so that it will reflect well on him or her. A narcissist might say, "My son got into Harvard," or, "My daughter is so beautiful, she's been recruited by several modeling agencies and is going to be an actress." Narcissistic parents will demand perfection from their children, and these very children grow up believing they must be perfect or they will be rejected on some level. And the cold, hostile rejection of a narcissistic parent is a hard pill to swallow. The children of such a parent try very hard to please, to be accepted and approved of, but the star they're shooting for is a kind of perfection. Have you ever heard the saying, "You can never be too rich or too thin"? Well, this is a narcissistic, perfectionistic saying. The idea that a woman can never be too thin is crazy. It breeds anorexia and bulimia, something I myself suffered from as a teenager and a young woman, because I had a perfectionistic disease. I received certain subconscious and conscious messages from my environment that my body image was imperfect, therefore, I was scolded and rejected. I had a belief installed in my subconscious that I had to achieve some kind of perfection in my appearance in order to be approved of or loved. Controlling what I put in my body became my game, the game I excelled at. It could have been tennis or running or even music, but for me, at that time in my life, it was my weight. The quest for physical perfection is huge in our society. Our society shoves it down our throats. We have these model ideas that we are held up against, and if we fall short of such perfection, we can easily feel we are simply not good enough. But there is also academics, sports, performing arts, and other areas that we feel we must achieve some standard of perfection. Although it can feel good to be accomplished and excel at something in your life, the quest for perfection is the downfall of self-acceptance. In order to truly love ourselves, we need to accept ourselves even when we miss the mark. We must love ourselves, sin and all. I feel perfectionism gets in the way of self-love more so than anything. We live in a world where self-help and weight loss is a multi-billion dollar industry. The message, you aren't good enough as you are. You must be improved upon. Although I'm a believer that it's good to set goals and work towards our personal best, there's a difference between personal best and best. Because in our world, you'll always find someone better and someone worse than you in some area, whether it is appearance, wealth, academic status, achievement, performance, or anything else. There really is no such thing as the best. I find it humorous when the magazine cover touts the world's top sexiest women or men. Who is the judge? Who gets to decide? We really don't have that right. In an example like this, beauty is truly in the eyes of the beholder. And some beauty is simply superficial. If we could change the name of the self-help industry to the self-acceptance industry, we would change the focus on improving ourselves to accepting ourselves. I feel the very act of self-acceptance will generate gradual improvement. Because when we love and accept ourselves exactly as we are, we stop putting pressure on ourselves to be something different than we are. The result is we begin to work towards our personal best by following our own desires and inspiration. We may become better artists, better musicians, better athletes, better businessmen and women, better friends and lovers, because we aren't doing things to impress anyone or to gain acceptance or approval. We're doing things because we are inspired to do them. Dr. Ernest Holmes, the founder of Science of Mind, says, "Comparison is the cause of all unhappiness." This is a bold statement, yet it carries a deep truth. The more we compare ourselves with others, the more we come up short, the more we inflate our egos in a belief that we are somehow superior. Whether you feel superior or inferior, you will be unhappy because you're either fighting to get somewhere or fighting to stay on top or convince others that you're the best. What a relief it would be if we could just surrender to what is and accept that we are where we are. How would your life be different if you didn't feel that you needed to compare yourself to anyone? The deeper truth is that there is nobody exactly like you. Just as no two snowflakes are alike, no two people are exactly alike. Therefore, there's nobody in this entire world who can do you better than you can. So you're already the best. You are the very best at being you. And this is why you are here. Out of self-love, we automatically are inspired to our highest calling in life. When we love ourselves, we learn to listen to our inner voice and follow the promptings of our soul rather than trying to do something because we think we should, or because we believe it would bring us status, attention, admiration, approval, and so forth. There's really only one person we need approval and acceptance from, ourselves. If you can't accept yourself and approve of yourself, then nobody else's acceptance and approval will mean anything anyway. You'll just discount it. So what if you were to accept that you are imperfectly perfect? This means that there is perfection in your imperfection. Just as a flaw in a diamond makes it more beautiful, your flaws make you more beautiful. I'm really talking about perceived flaws. We don't often look at a tree or a flower or a dog and start focusing on its imperfections, do we? Instead, we're likely to see the beauty. And this is how we must learn to perceive ourselves. In order to heal from my life-threatening eating disorder, I had to learn to accept that there was no perfect weight or thinness or beauty that would magically bring me the love, acceptance, and approval I desired. I had to learn to love, accept, and approve of myself, exactly as I am. My weight would probably go up, and it would probably go down. I would have good hair days and bad ones. I would have times I succeeded in life and times I failed. There would be times when I felt loved and other times when I felt hated. But in my center, at my core, I would always be me, and I would always be worthy. How often have you found yourself saying, "When I achieve this, then I will be happy," or "When I reach this weight goal or fitness goal, then I will be acceptable"? We so often live our lives under these crazy rules. When I do this, then I will have that. But it's really a big fat lie. It's not true. The only thing you really need to be happy and fulfilled in your life is self-acceptance. If you can learn to love yourself even when you are a little bit overweight or have no significant other in your life, or you haven't yet written that bestseller or made a ton of money or live in that ideal house, then you already have the makings of genuine happiness. Happiness is not about achievement. Happiness is most certainly not about achieving any kind of perfection. How many rich people are miserable? How many beautiful models live their lives on the brink of suicide? How many married people are really happy in their marriages? How many Olympic gold medal winners are truly happy with their lifestyles? How we look, what we have, and what we have achieved have nothing to do with how content and happy we are in our lives. This is truly an inside job. We must find that happiness that we're looking for by learning to be okay with ourselves exactly as we are right now. Our own self-loathing comes from believing we have somehow sinned at being human, that somehow we're doing human wrong. We believe we're unlovable, unworthy, shameful, unremarkable, not good enough, not slim enough, not beautiful enough, not accomplished enough, or wealthy enough. Our focus is on not enough, rather than on counting our blessings. When we take our focus from our not enoughness and start looking at what we do have enough of, we change our mindset and subsequently our relationship with ourselves. We might learn to say, "I have enough food. I have a roof over my head. There are people who love me. I have two legs and two arms that work. I have eyes to see and ears to hear. I don't need to change anything in order to be enough, because I already am." It's important to understand that shame is passed down from one generation to the next. Our parents project their own toxic shame, which is a feeling that there's something inherently wrong with me, onto their children. Not because there's anything wrong with their children, but because they feel there's something wrong with them, which they inherited from their parents and society. It's easy to go through life hiding one's shame from the world. The result is a whole slew of people walking around with the core belief that there's something really wrong with them and trying to hide this belief from others while pretending to be normal. What is normal anyway? It's a consensus agreement, nothing more. Normal is like average. If you have hot and you have cold, then warm is average, therefore normal. If you have short and you have tall, then somewhere in between is average and therefore normal. Although many of us strive to be seen as normal when we're young, as we grow older, normal can easily be perceived as dull or boring. Instead of being normal, we may strive to be exceptional. Exceptional is outside the norm. It is to be truly unique. To strive to be exceptional in one's own life is simply to be oneself. And to be yourself is automatically exceptional. You really don't have to strive at all. You simply need to let go of all that acting and pretending to be something other than what by nature you already are. If you find yourself hooking up with narcissists and others who judge you for not being enough by their standards, then your work is really to let go of people who are judging and non-accepting and start to align with people who love and accept you as you are. We often, through psychological insanity, pick people who are the least likely to approve of us and work overtime to get their approval. It is most likely a childhood dynamic of trying to get the approval of a parent or a teacher or some person who doesn't seem to notice you exist. There may be a program deep inside that says, "Please notice me. Notice I exist. Validate my existence." This need for the validation of your existence can be carried forward into adulthood, and your inner radar knows just how to pick the people least likely to see you as a separate, unique individual. You can end up feeling like Groucho Marx when he says, "I wouldn't want to belong to any club that would have me as a member." We go after the groups or people that are most likely to cause us to feel rejected. Now, how is that being self-loving? I have a mentor who once told me to practice rejecting the rejector, and I loved that. To reject the rejector is to say to yourself, "I don't want to be a part of any club that wouldn't have me as a member. I only want to be around people who love me, care about me, approve of me, and accept me exactly as I am. Anyone else is not worth my time or my energy." Doesn't it just make sense that we would want to migrate to the people and places where we feel most welcomed and embraced? If I'm a Buddhist and I try to fit into a Christian church, I can be sure that if I start talking Buddhist philosophy, I'll be judged and my philosophy challenged. I may also experience trying to be converted and made to believe something different. How does this serve me? If I was a Buddhist, wouldn't it make more sense that I would go instead to a Buddhist temple? If I am really beginning to have a healthy attitude towards life, and my former dysfunctional mindset is becoming functional, why would I choose to hang out in dysfunctional environments? It makes no sense. What even makes less sense is going into environments where we really don't belong and trying to change them to suit us. An example, if you're a sensitive, empathic individual, the absolute most toxic person for you to be around is a narcissistic personality who completely lacks empathy, because you will always feel what he or she is suppressing. And when you bring it to his or her attention, you'll most likely be attacked for daring to hold that mirror up. That mirror is going to be smashed. But we all do this. We do it all the time because opposites attract. Opposites attract so we can find more balance in ourselves. But sooner or later, we have to figure out who we really are and start hanging out with our own kind instead of trying to fit into where we don't belong. With those of us who have been in situations where we keep trying to fit a square peg in a round hole, keep trying to fit where we don't belong, we really need to be asking the question, where is my tribe? Where are the people who care, who have a heart, who have empathy, who are sensitive to me and my needs? Where are those people? I know they exist because I work with them every day. A friend recently told me, "Kalia, the reason you have a hard time finding someone who values you is because most men perceive you as weird, or might perceive you as weird. And I'm thinking, great, what a compliment. But he went on to explain that you're strong, wise, successful, sensitive, emotionally open. You're a vegetarian, holistic, alternative-minded, and look for honesty, integrity, ethics, and values that may not match the average Joe. You're too deep and complex for the average Joe, and it will take a very special person to see you for who you really are and to see who you really are. I realized that what he was saying was that I would scare the average Joe away eventually because he would have to stretch out of his comfort zone to really be with me. And why would he want to do that when there are plenty of people that he would align with, plenty of women who would be happy to snuggle up with him while he watches football and eats a burger and swigs down a cold beer? I'm not that woman, so why would I want that man? I would much rather be with someone I can have an in-depth conversation with, good healthy food, and true intimacy. But this is more rare. The more rare we are in our personality type, the more rare our mates will need to be, and the harder they may be to find. But we can't give up or settle for less. Our own perfection comes in finding those who can truly appreciate who we are, not in trying to convert those who just can't see our value or our beauty. First and foremost, we must be able to see our own value, to know our own worth and accept ourselves exactly as we are, sin and all. Yes, if you are an alcoholic, if you're 100 pounds overweight, if you're a drug addict, you may want to make some lifestyle changes. Self-acceptance doesn't mean to resign yourself to your current lifestyle. An addictive lifestyle doesn't make you a happy camper. Because when you're addicted to a substance or a way of life that is unhealthy, you're not in alignment with your soul's path. Accepting you are an alcoholic is more like admitting you are one and doing something about it. Accepting that you're 100 pounds overweight may mean admitting that your diet and lifestyle isn't serving you. It's not grounds to hate yourself or treat yourself poorly. On the contrary, the more you love yourself, the easier it is to make positive changes, because why would you abuse someone you love? It's out of our own self-loathing that we abuse ourselves with poor lifestyle choices and toxic playmates. Self-loving is self-acceptance. Self-acceptance is to accept that you are and will always be imperfectly perfect. Who you are is perfect for you. But you will always fall short of some idealized world-based perfection that doesn't really exist. The path back to self is the path back to where, to who you really are, who you were born to be, who is lovable by divine nature. There's nothing you have to be or do or change for anyone else. It's all about you. If you want to make lifestyle changes, do it for you. After all, you are the one you will always have to live with. You may as well like that person. So be the person you would love to be with, not by striving for perfection, but by letting go and discovering who you by nature already are. And this is the key to your true happiness. If you would like to learn more about my work, please visit my websites, pathbacktoself.com or narcissismfree.com, where I offer all kinds of articles, information, ebooks, counseling services, audio downloads, and there are also a whole lot more radio broadcasts that you can listen to. For now, have a great day, and we'll see you next time.